I'll quote Brian Jacobson. Is this a stumbling bull or an awakening bear? Welcome. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. In the next hour, a great example of what we do on behalf of our clients. But it's just a glimpse. We're going to talk about financial and retirement planning for Generation X. Ask Annex is coming up and a whole lot more. I'm Danny Clayton. Dr. Brian Jacobson, the quote master, is our chief economist. Welcome.
It's great to be here.
Dave Spano, president and CEO, Annex Wealth Management. Welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. Let's talk about that, Brian. Of course, a stumbling bull is really what we have at the moment because of a number of days in a row of losing on the market. And of course, Friday closed the same way. Mm-hmm. Even some of the tech stocks got really beaten down. But of course, the night before, Iran and Israel had another little dust up. So geopolitical risk is happening. Earnings season's getting ready, but there's a lot to talk about here today.
Yeah, there really is. It's investors have been reminded that investing does entail taking on risks, and our job is to try to figure out whether or not those risks are well compensated or not, because you can't really get away from the risks unless you want to, you know, cower in a corner. And if you want to grow wealth over time, it does involve exposing yourself to prudent risks, and that's really what we do. Most recently, a lot of the dust up in the market has been around between Iran and Israel, as far as what's going on there. Thankfully, it looks like that might be dissipating, that is not escalating. Let's hope that is indeed the case. Also, the Fed's narrative about maybe not needing to hike anytime soon.
And you see Anil Kashkara made news again this week saying, we may not see it at all. The market certainly didn't like that.
That's right. Yeah. And he, you know, Neil Kashkari is one of those Fed officials that honestly I don't listen to a lot, mainly because he says the same thing again and again. But then again, a lot of them do. But also, he's not really representing the central tendency, the median voter of the FOMC. He's a bit of an outlier, and he has been out there saying maybe we don't need to actually cut this year. But he always hedges what he says because it's about if inflation doesn't come down, then we probably won't need to cut this year. Well, he's correct. If inflation doesn't resume its downward trajectory. So I think the market might be overreacting, putting too much weight on what he's been saying.
No, the market's overreacting.
That's
come
right.
On.
Yeah, they
come
never
on,
do that, do
but,
they?
But, you talk about, should they cut? Well, the rest of the world is certainly considering that. And if they do that and we don't, it will have an effect, for example, on the dollar.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that the market has been really beginning to price that in. The dollar has strengthened this year based on, I think, a lot of the expectation that the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, they are likely to start cutting rates this year. They're almost much more certain to cut than what the Federal Reserve is. And so when you do have that difference in direction of the central banks, when they start to go their own way, then you do see those currency moves. And that's really what's been reflected in the foreign exchange market.
Right. And of course, commodities as well. We see gold continuing to move up as well. And that's part of this conversation.
Yep.
But you talk about what's happening around the world. And of course, we can go to the other side of the pond completely and see what China is doing. And they are, of course, putting up big GDP numbers, but it might be fake news.
It might be. Yeah, you always have to take their GDP or any of their economic data with a grain of salt, probably, salt around the rim of a margarita glass, just to really see whether or not there's any confidence in it. Because the GDP numbers, they're targeting about 5% growth. And coincidentally, they posted 5.3% year-on-year growth. So magically, it was within target.
But let me just jump in and say part of that is because I think they're dumping some of their exports around the world, EVs and solars, for example. If they dump that, it looks like GDP, but if it doesn't get sold, it really shouldn't be booked.
Well, that's true. And also, in addition to that, they're building extra capacity. So that gets counted as investment spending. So it's not just the exports, the consumption, but that investment spending. Now, think back to the global financial crisis. They built, these big cities that were not occupied, right, bridges to nowhere. But what they've been doing lately is increasing production capacity for electric vehicles and for the green economy. And that's one of the reasons why Treasury Secretary Yellen went over there to basically tell them that, we see you doing this and we don't want you creating all this massive capacity and then eventually trying to dump those products on the rest of the world.
And not only EVs and solar, but certainly there was news out of the Biden administration talking about tariffs, which was really a Trump thing, but this came out of Biden's camp.
I know. Yeah, it is campaign season, right? As far as know your audience. That's one of the key things. And when President Biden was speaking in Pittsburgh, he had announced that he had intentions of placing additional tariffs on steel and aluminum from China. And that does seem like something out of former President Trump's playbook. But if it plays well in Pittsburgh, you know, you may as well sing the song.
Right, exactly. And of course, lastly, of earnings season, we are in full swing. Next week, there will be 150 of the S&P 500 companies reporting. That is a lot, but there's a lot of news coming out of that as well.
That's right. Yeah, 150 of them so far. We've only had about 13% of the companies report. Expectations coming in was to see earnings up about 3.4% year on year. So far, it's coming in relatively flat. It's still early days, but what we're seeing is a lot of divergences. You know, energy, it's expected that their earnings will be down pretty materially, but that's mainly because of what their earnings were last year. But
then you have comparison.
Right. So it's always that year on year comparison that can kind of catch people off guards.
And of course, we're going to look at the individual names as they come across. A story that you and I were discussing before we went on the air is that Red Lobster is contemplating bankruptcy. And in fact, I think it looks like they're going to do that because of leases and labor costs, you know, restructuring Chapter 11, which really is, I'm interested in that because of the endless shrimp and teriyaki sauce.
Well, and also let's not forget those cheddar biscuits. Those
exactly.
things were delicious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it is kind of sad when you see these really... sort of almost legendary brands struggling like this, but they've struggled in the past before and have emerged from it. Now, thankfully, it seems like they're really planning a Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which means restructuring, as opposed to a Chapter 7, which would be, hey, let's liquidate things. So it's about getting out from under the burden of the high debt and all these leases.
So a lot of names we can discuss throughout next week, but of course, folks, you got to know what you own and why you own it. We say it all the time. And how much you're paying for it. That's part of the disclosure. That's part of being a fiduciary.
Dave Spano, President and CEO, Annex Wealth Management. Dr. Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economist. We've got them for the rest of the show. That's our Week in Review. It's powerful information. It's yours for free, and it's always available on demand at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, and in the Axiom newsletter. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, Saturday, April 20th. Still to come, financial and retirement planning for Generation X. We're going to be right back on 620 WTMJ. We are back. Reminder, Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast, a Monday morning look at what our investment team has identified as strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats for the upcoming week. By the way, it's going to be episode 100. That's a free download available wherever you get your podcasts. Last weekend, it was a last mad scramble to get your taxes done. Join us 1 week from today. We're going to talk about tax planning. We're not about the tax preparation as much. I mean, we help some of the clients with that, but planning is where it's at. So listen for a special segment on that. I'm Danny Clayton. Dr. Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management is here. Dave Spano is our President and CEO.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. And of course, April showers bring May flowers. And the reason why I bring that up is because people's attitudes begin to change. And what happens is consumers go out and spend more. We saw some retail sales that came out, and it was affected a little bit about when Easter was in the calendar. But again, it's that time of year as well.
It really is. Yeah, a lot of people are going out there, maybe doing home improvement projects, doing the yard work, things like that. I know that, Danny, you perhaps have a few nicks and scratches from
this
doing
big
a little...
thing on the top of my head. That's a tree branch.
That's right. Yeah, but people do like to spend a little bit more in April. We try to seasonally adjust these numbers to make it comparable across time, but consumers are spending more. One of the areas that I thought was kind of interesting, though, is that people are spending a lot more on gasoline. It was up more than 2%
and
month
going
on
higher
month.
Prices of oil going up,
so that doesn't look to be going away, and it looked like people were beginning to almost eat into their discretionary spending. We know that over the last year, spending at food establishments and bars was up more than 6.5%, but it only rose 0.4% month on month in the most recent report. And so are people beginning to fill up their gas tank instead of filling up their bellies?
Yeah, that's funny. And of course, there's this thing called the Beige Book. It was kind of a bummer book, wasn't it?
It really was. Yeah, it's been really this kind of bummer of a read over the last few months, because it does look like manufacturing is continuing to struggle, maybe finding a little bit of a footing, but it is really a big hole they're trying to dig out of. And consumers, it noted, are beginning to pare back, becoming much more price sensitive, really shifting away from these discretionary items, things you don't have to have, more towards focusing on spending on things that are needs that you need to have, the non-discretionary component of spending.
And of course, you know, there's disruptions that happen that you just can't forecast. And you can really talk about either what's happening in the Red Sea or what happened in Baltimore.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, both of those, we would expect those to affect shipping, of course. And then the question is how big of an impact does that have on other activity? We know all the problems that happened during COVID when ports were shut down. Thankfully, it looks like manufacturers have been able to navigate around some of these shipping delays, but it is increasing their costs, not only as far as the amount of time that it takes and the fuel, but even insurance costs for a lot of that freight.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano is our President and CEO. We got them for the rest of the hour. The show, Fiduciary Advice, Comprehensive Strategies, Empowering Education. That's how this company rolls, and that's how we are going to deal with you as a client. We'd love to talk to you about 2024 and beyond. If you're with somebody already, nothing wrong with a second look. It all starts by heading to the website at annexwealth.com, clicking that Get Started button. Still to come, financial retirement planning for Generation X, Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only fiduciary uniquely equipped to assist with a variety of clients from the greatest generation to millennials, and contained within those groups are Generation X, and that's what we're going to talk about. To do so, I'm joined by Kyle Svetlik, Wealth Manager at Annex Wealth Management. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, Danny.
So you're going to have to be an honorary Gen Xer because I found out you're actually an old millennial. There is such a thing.
Doesn't that sound weird coming off your tongue? Old yeah. Millennial? That's where we're at today, but I am happy to fill the shoes and be an honorary Gen Xer today with you.
Most of Gen X is not on the doorstep of retirement, but they're definitely in the neighborhood. And that means increased focus, taking definitive steps. Many Gen Xers performing a balancing act. They've got careers. They've got kids. They've got aging parents, which means they're in the sandwich generation. They got college debt. It'd be natural, but it would be a mistake to put off investment and retirement planning.
I agree. And I think if you're sitting in that seat of being a Generation Xer, right now, the check engine light's got to be on. If it's in your car, you can find reasons to ignore it, or you have something that comes up that's more important. You've got kids you got to take to school and you don't want to take it into the shop to get it fixed. Same thing goes for financial planning and retirement planning. And we found that this is more profound in Generation X than it is in millennials or baby boomers. And it's delaying, and there's consequences to that. So if you end up delaying your planning for retirement, you might find out that you're in a situation later in life that gives you financial strain, maybe a reduction of the lifestyle that you want to have, and it might make you more reliant on Social Security. Generation X isn't as trusting in the Social Security payments as maybe the baby boomers were. And that fact of being reliant on that income stream is going to probably cause a little angst, or you're going to have a punch to the stomach when you hear that.
Interesting to note that Gen X, they're going to be the first to reach retirement after the shift from defined benefit plans like pensions to 401ks. Kyle, at this point for Gen Xers, how important is it to like reassess risk or align a portfolio and plan? They're coming to Annex with a collection of investments, but probably a ton of overlap.
Yeah, and one of the things we do here at Annex, when you come aboard, we'll take a look at the allocations that you have in just not your IRA accounts, but in your 401k accounts. And you might think that because you're invested in a 2030 target date account, or you're invested in a large cap growth account, or you have an investment in a weighted S&P index, you have diversification. And that might be a misconception, because in all of those funds, you could have underlying assets that are the same sector or even the same companies to a high degree. So something we want to take a look at is how well are you really allocated in these accounts? And we find that sometimes there is a lot of overlap. If you're in the tech sector, you've done well over the last year and a half, but that might not be where you need to be for the next 2, 3, 4, or 5 years down the road. So we want to take a look at that and make sure you're properly allocated into your funds.
We're with Kyle Svetlik, Wealth Manager at Annex Wealth Management, talking about Gen X and retirement. And I often read that Gen X, they feel the deck is stacked against them. They often wonder if they'll ever be able to retire. There was a retirement survey that revealed like 61% of Gen Xers aren't confident in their ability to achieve that dream retirement. That's a heavy load.
I would agree, a heavy load. And what's dream retirement? Is that sitting in Florida 6 months out of the year, or is that just making the ability to pay your bills so you can pay your bills on time and you have a stream of income coming in that's satisfied by your IRA accounts and Social Security, but maybe annuities that you have off to the sidelines? So what does that dream retirement look like? And when I was reading through that survey as well, it sounded like Gen Xers just want to get to the finish line. They just want to get to retirement, and their dream retirement's just making the ends meet to pay the bills, which in all opinions should not be how you plan and set up for retirement. It should be, how do I get to the finish line strong so that I can go and do the things I want to do in retirement? I want a vacation. I want to take the kids to Disney World. If you want to go to Disney World, you have to start saving today for those trips. And you want to make sure that you're able to bless your family with that.
If they've got ground to make up, catch-up contributions, that could make a huge difference, right?
Yeah, catch-up contributions are big. If you're 50 or older and you have an IRA and you can contribute into an IRA account based off of your income and where you're at with a 401k plan, you can put up an extra $1,000. Right now, under 50, it's $7,000 for an IRA. An extra $1,000 puts you up to $8,000 a year. And in your 401k, 403b, your employer plans, you actually can put up to $23,000 away in those. And then you have an additional catch-up, which is $7,500. So if you start putting away today, you could effectively almost put away $40,000 a year if you're trying to catch up into retirement. And if you have 10 years, 15 years out, that can really make a big dent in that concern that you're not going to be able to retire on time and really give you a prosperous retirement.
So we're singling out Gen X in this segment. I'm a boomer. I've got the same challenges. You might too, folks. Website, annexwealth.com. Click that Get Started button. Kyle Svetlik, Wealth Manager, Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Danny.
Saturday, April 20th, bottom of the hour. Let's get caught up. And for that, we go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Time for Ask Annex, joined by Matt Morsey, Investment Team Manager, CFP. Welcome.
Hey.
Brad Coleman, CFP and a wealth manager. Welcome to you.
Hey, Danny.
Question one on Ask Annex. I'm recently divorced and my ex-spouse was always the breadwinner in our household. I'm planning to take half of his Social Security. My FRA is 67. I'd like to know, if I start collecting spousal Social Security benefits at 67 and also collect a government pension, would my Social Security benefits be affected by receiving a government pension?
Great question. Just a lot of moving parts here. So I'll start with the rules when it comes to getting your ex-spouse's Social Security. After a divorce, in order to collect your ex-spouse's Social Security, you must have been married for 10 years and you can't remarry. Also, you'll either get half of what your spouse's benefit is, or you'll get your full benefit. So if your benefit is less than half of your spouse's benefit, then you'll get your ex-spouse's benefit. Because you're collecting a government pension, there's also a thing called GPO. So that's government pension offset. What that means is you take your pension amount and 2/3 of that has to be subtracted from whatever half of his Social Security is. It could be reduced all the way to zero. So I recommend speaking with a wealth manager and then also a divorce specialist. We have CDFAs on our staff that can help you navigate this with a great plan.
That is really complicated.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Is that on the CFP exam?
It's on there. It's on there for sure.
Wow. Okay. Question two on Ask Annex. Is it meaningful to compare EPS across companies? EPS is earnings per share.
That's correct.
Okay. It seems like an unfair comparison because, all things being equal, a company with a smaller number of shares outstanding will report a greater EPS than a company with more shares outstanding.
Yeah, assuming they have the same amount of earnings, which two companies are generally not going to. Earnings per share, I think, is something to compare against a company's own history and where they're going in the future. Earnings per share is growing for a specific company over time. That's going to be a good sign. You know, as the question points out, though, if they are buying back shares, you know, and their share count is reducing, even if their earnings stay the same, their earnings per share will go higher. What I think is really useful exercise, you know, if you're going to try to compare companies against each other, is looking at price multiple off of that. So like PE, so price over earnings. So that way you're taking that earnings per share as the bottom part of that, and you can equalize that against other companies. So regardless of how many shares they have, you can compare two companies and what their PE ratio is against each other. Now, again, you're going to want to compare how that company is against itself in the past and where you think it's going forward. Are they in the same industry? Are they in the same subsector of that industry as well, too, that they could be comparable against each other? But looking at historical ranges is going to be really important. Looking at trends over time is going to be really important. So there's a lot to put into that. You know, especially the market is going to have an impact on what that price is for that share. And it's going to tell you something. And if a company has a higher PE, it's going to be more expensive. But there might be reasons why it's more expensive and the company's rewarding the growth of that company and rewarding what that future prospects look like. A lot to dig in there. But yeah, EPS by itself, it's hard to compare.
So it's earnings season, right?
Yeah.
Is that one of the numbers you'll look at first?
Oh, it's certainly up there. You know, when we're looking at one company, again, specific to itself, you're going to want to be looking at what have they done historically. But again, these comparisons are all made to what do you think is going to happen with the company, because you're not buying what the company did before. You're buying what you believe the company is going to do going forward.
It's Ask Annex. Got a question for us? You're always welcome. Head to the website, annexwealth.com. Don't have to be a client for that, by the way. We get back to everybody. Some of them wind up on the radio. If we can help, click that Get Started button. Question three, Ask Annex. Why is the 60-40 portfolio back in fashion? And Fred, just a quick explanation on what 60-40 is.
Sure. So 60% stocks, 40% bonds. It's usually looked at as the basic moderate portfolio. Depending on your risk tolerance, it can go either way. But looking forward, 2022 was a really painful year. And 2023 got better. But the main reason for that was because of the quick rise in interest rates. Historically, the 60-40 portfolio has done very well. And looking forward, for the first time in a long time, you're going to be able to get some type of yield off of your bond portfolio. For the longest time, interest rates were very low. Now you can get 4 or 5% of yield, which is really going to cushion the returns of that portfolio.
Yeah, it's important to remember that these things are going to go in trends. You know, there's going to be time periods where certain allocations or certain type of investments are going to be in favor, and other times where maybe they're going to underperform, and or maybe they have previously underperformed and people want to throw them out. 60-40 does tend to be kind of that moderate investor's allocation over time. It is considered to be, you know, the most popular one that people talk about. It's not necessarily right for everybody. If somebody's going to be aggressive, they're certainly going to have a lot more equities in it. If they're conservative, they're going to want to have less. But they do need to make sure that there's that balance between the two. And stocks and bonds really are the two main building blocks of most portfolios. So that's why they get compared together. And you're right, Fred, you know, having yields back available within a portfolio getting 4 or 5+% is really, really attractive and does provide some investment return on the fixed income side of things. And the chance that at some point the Fed will cut, you'll get some capital appreciation on that as well, too, as bond prices go up when rates go down. So that's going to play off of each other. But it's something to watch over time and make sure that that's comfortable for your own risk tolerance. Not everybody's going to be a 60-40, but a lot are. From an age perspective, can you sleep at night when the stock market goes down? You know, are you going to worry about things? There's going to be areas of that that you're going to want to make your own changes to. But when we think about, is the 60-40 dead or is it back? That's really relative to where you are at that point in time.
That's Ask Annex. Matt Morsey, Investment Team Manager, CFP. Thanks.
Thank you.
Fred Coleman, CFP and a Wealth Manager. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management? WRS is the Wisconsin Retirement System. Over 675,000 people in Wisconsin are part of it. It's the 9th largest pension system in the country. Annex has clients who are in that system, and we can tell you, as well-run as it is, there are still some questions. In fact, we got a webinar coming up to dig deeper with the help of my guest, Eric Strom, Financial Planning Manager, CFP, EA with the IRS at Annex Wealth Management. Hey, Eric.
Hello, Danny.
So, folks, if you're a public worker and you're a participant in WRS and you've not started your benefit, the mid-April letter that outlines your plan is key. Still not an online portal for account access, so this statement is very important. It's a good idea to understand what it means. Eric, what does it mean?
So this account and this benefit affects my own family because my wife is a public school teacher. So we, in fact, just got our WRS statement this past week with the updated benefits. So we looked over that. But many people don't read this. Maybe they throw it in a folder or shred it, right? Don't do that. Your WRS pension is one of the building blocks to your successful financial future. This is part of your nest egg. And, you know, maybe you also have IRAs, or maybe you have the Wisconsin Deferred Comp 457 plan. A lot of public workers do have access to that. Maybe your spouse has a plan like a 401k. This statement outlines your benefit and you want to understand it and how it fits into your financial life.
You are right, because they are arriving. My wife also has a teaching background. Hers arrived. My son, who's a police officer, his arrived. So I was bugging him about keeping it, looking at it. What do we need to be looking at?
First, you want to review it to make sure the data is correct. Now, this is pretty rare, but sometimes mistakes can be made. Check your name, check your address, right, if you've moved. Check your years of service or your income last year, because there are cases where that can get put in incorrectly. And then look at the beneficiary section, right? Look to see if you filled out a beneficiary. And if you did, is it up to date? Maybe you got married or had another change in your life. Another thing to look at is look to see if you're participating in what's called the variable option. We're going to talk about this at the upcoming webinar. But if you are not, and you're in your, let's say, 20s, 30s, mid-40s, you might want to consider joining our webinar, learning more about that, because that's an interesting consideration. And finally, on that statement, Danny, there are pension estimates at the very end where it would tell you what your benefit could be. Those assume that you already stopped working at the end of the prior year, which is, for many teachers and police officers and others, is not the case, right? You might have decades in front of you. So there is an online calculator that you can use to calculate a benefit. A good financial planner or someone on their team will be able to help walk you through doing that. We'll certainly look at that a little bit in our event as well. But those are some of the things that you want to take a look at.
Most financial statements come quarterly, right? This one only comes once a year.
It comes annually only, and there is no online portal yet. You know, hopefully there will be in the future, but there's no account you can go log into and check on your benefit. This is it. This is your paper that comes once a year to check on that benefit.
That's interesting, because as well-run as this pension is, that's a little behind.
It is a little bit behind. They recognize that. It's actually right on the website that they say that. And so hopefully we will see that in the future. But rest assured, it is a very well-run pension. In fact, well-funded and very responsibly constructed pensions. It's an example, really, to many other parts of the country of a well-run pension.
What if somebody did want to make those changes? How do they do that if there's not a portal?
They have a series of forms available on the website that can be filled out. You know, a little bit old school, but it gets the job done. And sometimes you might need to change a beneficiary or elect variable contributions or whatever it is, and it still needs to be done that way. I will say they have a great call center, Danny. You can contact them by phone, and they are very helpful.
Well, because it's full of good Wisconsin people answering the phone.
Of course it is.
That's right. Hey, let's talk about the webinar that's coming up. You'll be joined by WTMJ's Steve Scafidi. WRS webinar was really well attended. So anyone involved in WRS, encouraged to sign up and spread the word too, so your friends and your coworkers can learn more about it and ask some questions. It's called Understand Your WRS Pension Potential Webinar. And it's Tuesday, April 30th with WTMJ's Steve Scafidi. That's at 4:00. Eric, how does it usually run?
At this webinar, we'll go through some general education about the WRS benefit, how to understand your statement and your benefit that you potentially have there. Also, we'll take a lot of questions. In fact, previously, we took, I believe, 30 to 40 or more questions throughout the event. It was very highly attended and lots of great questions and interactive, which made it fun for me. So come there ready with questions. Now, even if we can't answer all of them, we will get the answer and get back to you. It's a good way to learn more about your benefit, because this is your nest egg, right, Danny?
Yeah.
This is your money. You've really got to take this serious, because if you're not caring about your money, who else is, right?
Again, it's Understand Your WRS Pension Potential Webinar, Tuesday, April 30th, 4:00. Sign up at annexwealth.com/events. Eric Strom, Financial Planning Manager, CFP, and an enrolled agent with the IRS at Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. We're going to take a break and be right back on 620 WTMJ. We're back. Financial planning at every level. Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, Annex Ignite. We're going to meet you where you're at. If you'd like to hear a podcast version of this show, it's going to be live at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts. On the show today, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano is our President and CEO.
Thanks, Danny. You know, Brian, we talk about asset allocation a lot, and it doesn't really matter if you have $50,000 or $5 billion. Mm-hmm. Asset allocation is a real thing, yep. And we do that for our clients, all the way from startup to comprehensive wealth management, all the way to private client. But we took a look at some pension funds over the past week, and we see them starting to change some of their asset allocation, and we found it interesting.
Yeah, really, there. When you look at the pension universe, it's really interesting as far as what is their objective. It can be a little different than the objective of individual investors. So if you think about those classic defined benefit plans where the employer was socking away money to pay out employees some sort of deferred compensation or annuity over time, they wanted to try to fund those. And the massive increase that we've seen in the equity markets has actually made that a little bit easier for them to fund it. Also, this increase in interest rates has made it easier to fund those. So a lot of these private and public sector pension plans are doing a lot better. And as a result, they have been actually taking a little bit of money off of the table because they don't
On the equity side,
right. Especially.
So, but I want to make sure. I mean, the money stays in the washing machine. It's just
it gets thrown around, right?
Yeah. Yep. So they are taking some money off of the equities because they had a 10% movement in the first quarter, which was a good year, and they're starting to shift that.
That's right. So of the $9 trillion that are in pension plans, it's estimated that maybe they're going to make about a 5 percentage point move out of equities more into higher yielding fixed income. And one of the questions that we get from a lot of clients is, you know, if I am making 5 to 5.5% on my money market fund, why would I want to own equities? Well, you know, you just have to kind of look back at what happened with equities over the last year where you're up more than 20%, right? So it is more risk, but the higher yield on cash does create almost like a higher hurdle rate for investors to kind of think about when coming to the point of deciding how much risk do they really want to take on. Maybe they can dial it back a little bit now that yields are high, as high as what they are.
And, you know, they're moving these dials around. And of course, the quarter that we just ended here at the beginning of the year in 2024 was the best quarter we've seen since the first quarter of 2019. So this is an opportunity to rebalance, if you will, no different than what Mrs. Kuskovevitz is going to do, right, in her portfolio. Yep. But make those moves right now. But they do have something that she may not have in their portfolio, and that's private equity and private debt.
That's correct, yeah. So when you do look at higher net worth individuals and these pension plans, they do have a slightly bigger toolbox, right? You do need to be, say, accredited or qualified in order to invest in certain less liquid securities. And that's actually what a number of pension plans have been doing, is looking at private credit. So instead of the, if you think about a traditional mutual fund that invests in bonds, they're looking at more private structures that sometimes can go to a much bigger pool of people that they're lending money to. So the yields there can be higher, but it is almost a slightly more exclusive club in order to be investing in that. So for a lot of our higher net worth clients, we do work with them as far as determining whether or not private equity, private real estate, or private credit, or even private infrastructure, are those going to be appropriate? Will it help them achieve their financial goals or not?
And let's go through just a real basic example of the vehicles that people can use. Of course, everyone knows about mutual funds, but there's an institutional style mutual fund which pays a lower cost. But there is this, obviously what's happened over the last couple of decades is exchange traded funds, really all the way down to sectors or countries. They can really get specific, and then individual stocks and bonds. And of course, when you talk about bonds, there's really a couple levers you can pull. So all of this really means going through this portfolio.
It does. And then when we're looking at the private markets, it's a slightly different structure there where it might actually be a partnership. So it's not necessarily something that you just can, you know, log into your account and invest in. It's actually you oftentimes structured as a limited partnership, a lot more paperwork involved. And it's also requires a lot more due diligence. And by due diligence, we just mean that it's really that footwork that you do to understand what's in there. And then also, what are all the fees? Because sometimes the fees can be quite a bit higher than what you see in exchange traded funds and mutual funds.
I just want to end up on one thing that you said last week, and I used it actually this week, is that humility goes along with investing. If you don't have it, you certainly can get your hat handed to you.
Dr. Brian Jacobson is our chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. What's the chance of you hearing any of the Taylor Swift album this weekend?
You know, I might actually try to listen to it because I'm sure my son is going to ask me. Not that he's a fan. He's a classical music fan, but I'm sure he's hearing it at school.
And then, Dave, you got a daughter, but you love music in general.
No chance.
Why did I know that? All right. And I know three Taylor Swift songs, but boy, do I respect her business acumen. Hey, folks, our show is only an hour, but we do our best to showcase a sample of what we do on behalf of our clients. Hey, ask your friends, ask your neighbors who are clients. We want you to know the difference because, ladies and gentlemen, there is a difference. Only takes a couple of minutes to start the conversation. AnnexWealth.com. Click that Get Started button. Thanks for listening. See you next Saturday at 10. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, 620 WTMJ.